Why doesn't the rain fall all at once? Something I'm sure that Adele was asking. I wonder what she's been up to recently. Can technology change the track of a hurricane? What's the weather like on other planets? And meteorologist Simon King and Claire Nasir reveal in the book, What Does Rain Smell Like? The Captivating Ways the Weather Works, from exploring incredible weather phenomenon, breaking down our knowledge of the elements and the history of weather. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from various parts of the planet, obviously. We have Claire and Simon with us this morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good to have you with us now. Claire, you're in Spain, and Simon, are you back in the UK?
Yes.
I am, yeah. I'm in the northwest, in Media City in Salford.
Ah, right then. And Claire, you're on the Costa del Sol, I believe.
Yes, I am. Just down the road from you.
We could have popped in, but never mind. Anyway, yes. The coffee is pretty good. Right then, what does the weather smell like? Why, we think we know about the weather, and it's being British, obviously, you know, the weather films most of our conversations, but actually, there's very little we do know about the wild ways of the weather. Claire?
Yes, I mean, it's a topic where you're always going to be a student of meteorology. I've been working in weather now for 30 years, and I still learn things every day because it's a complex web of so many different ingredients which bring a huge swathe of conditions to the UK, but around the world. And so all it takes is something happening, say, in the US, and that could really alter wind patterns and wind direction for us in the UK. And so we can go from maybe a cold northerly, where we could even see wintry showers in the north, to a warm southeasterly, where we get there's sort of a mini heat wave in the southeast. So there's lots to play for every day. It means there's a real challenge, but certainly me and Simon do rise to that challenge every day.
Yeah, and for those of you who may be recognising the voice, by the way, Claire, you were the MTV, you were the GMTV's weather anchor for a while, weren't you?
Yes, for 12 years, getting up an ungodly hour. Yes, I was. Breakfast TV in the UK starts, well, for me, it used to start at 3 o'clock in the morning, on air at 6. Travelling around the country in all kinds of weathers, reporting on what's going on outside if you're stepping out to school or work. And now I have I would say it's a better job because of the time. I'm on Channel 5. I'm their anchor for weather now.
So, Simon, why did we decide that we needed to write this book about weather? And I'm flabbergasted about the fact that did the weather ever start a war?
Yeah, well, so why do we write the book? Well, we did a podcast together, actually, for the BBC called Under the Weather. And in that podcast, we had 10 episodes where we kind of answered questions about general meteorology. We wanted to try and break it down into kind of easy, digestible, non-scientific information. And, you know, we came up with all these questions. And one of the questions was, you know, atmospheric aromatherapy. So we talked about, what does rain smell like? You know, can you smell a storm coming? You know, all these different things. And then we thought, you know what, we've got a lot of stuff here that we could write a book for. So it was, you know, it was literally a bit of a brain dump for both Claire and I, just to get everything we know about the weather into a book in a kind of easy, kind of interesting sort of manner. So that was kind of the idea about it. And yeah, so weather and war, that's a fascinating subject because I was a reserve officer in the Royal Air Force. So I have quite an interest in the military and meteorology and how important the weather is for the military. You know, I went to Iraq, Afghanistan, forecasting the weather. And a lot of my mates said to me, why are you forecasting the weather in a desert? You know, it's just surely so hot and sunny all the time, isn't it? And then, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it, and, you know, they can get quite severe weather, and that can have impacts on the troops. So, you know, this is a historical thing. The Royal Navy have meteorologists, and, you know, it is important not only on, you know, for you and me, you know, do we need an umbrella outside, but if you think about the massive geopolitical aspect of weather, you know, it could start a war. If, you know, we started to do things that might manipulate the weather a little bit, or, you know, governments doing their own little thing to kind of impact what the weather is doing, you know, that could certainly have bigger consequences.
And of course, if people are scratching their heads going, I know that voice too, you're the resident weather correspondent on BBC Five Live Breakfast, aren't you?
I am, yes. I'm still doing those ungodly hours that Claire's managed to get rid of.
So, I mean, is it a particularly British thing, do you think, to Claire, to with this fascination with the weather? Do you think it's something in our national psyche that makes us sort of weather experts? Because, you know, there are, whatever, never mind 1,000 words for snow, we seem to have about 30,000 words for rain.
Absolutely. Mizzle was my favourite, although insane right now. And there's nothing like Mizzle out there. But in the UK, I know they've got heavy rain coming through. I'm not smiling, but I have timed my holiday very well. Yes, I mean, you know, across the world, there's big Met services, whether it's Japan, Australia, the US. But the UK is probably one of the best in the world when it comes to meteorology, because we have an obsession with weather. It's the first topic of conversation when we meet new people. And it's something we all have an opinion about. And we do, because it affects us day on day. We can have four seasons in a day in the UK. And that's really why we're never going to be out of a job. Hopefully, fingers crossed, myself and Simon, because people want to know what's going to happen next.
And I mean, we're in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have the COP26 conference, obviously, or the next couple of days. There has been a huge change in the weather, a huge interest in the weather. I mean, predicting the future of weather, naysayers and whatever our political considerations aside, this must be quite an interesting time to be in the business of predicting what the weather's going to do. Simon?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I studied climatology at university, you know, and so, you know, we did like these basic computer models, which clearly show that carbon dioxide is warming our planet. You know, this is 20 years ago. So it's been something in my conscious, reality since then. And it's been very difficult as climate scientists to kind of get that across. You know, there's been the climate deniers. But I think, you know, I've definitely seen the shift in the last 5 years where, you know, we are definitely talking about it much more. People have definitely come across to the side of thinking, well, yeah, it is us, you know, harming our planet. And you're right, COP26 coming up next week. Everybody's talking about it. You know, the BBC especially have, you know, been doing a lot more stuff on climate. We've now got a climate editor. You know, that was quite a big step to have a dedicated position for that. So, yeah, it's great to see now that people are actually listening and paying attention to the climate, because, you know, the Earth is warmed by 1.2 degrees Celsius. And the way things are going at the moment, you know, it could be up to 2.7 degrees. That's kind of the realistic that's the realistic warming that we're going to see. So it's going to have major consequences. You know, our children are going to be living in a very different world when they grow up to what they are now.
Claire, same question for you. Obviously, you've seen how we treat the weather, which used to be, you know, a part of the news where you, and with the greatest respect to your industry, you'd go, okay, you know, Michael Fish, notwithstanding in his famous 87 speech, you know, people have been looking at the weather and now are taking it much more seriously and the whole climate situation.
Absolutely. I mean, when I started broadcasting on network TV 25 years ago, climate change stories were really very rare. Because it was an issue for the next generation rather than living and breathing it now. Whereas we're on the front line of climate change right now. It's not just here in the UK, right around the world, and some places are far more vulnerable than others. So there's a real clear and present danger. And when it's in your face, you want to react and do something about it. Just in the last year, we saw a temperature almost of 50 degrees Celsius in Canada with horrific wildfires. Wildfires across the tundra of the far north of Scandinavia, as well as Russia. I mean, these things are unprecedented. And the amount of devastation in Australia because of the heat wave we saw last year, and also again wildfires, which had decimated places, you know, regions as large as the UK, is very, very scary. And that's why we're all coming together. Collaboration is one of the key features of COP26, as well as adaptation, mitigation, and mobilizing finance. And so we've got 197 countries arriving in Glasgow next week to negotiate, to try and curb our CO2 emissions so we can keep warming under 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius at the very worst. So there's a lot of work to do, because we've got some big emitters coming to the UK, Brazil, Australia, Russia, China. You know, these countries are not instigating policy how it should be to actually reach those targets.
Let's get back to the nuts and bolts of the book itself. And I've had a message in from Tim who says, well, the smell of rain is called, is it petrichor? Am I getting this right? And it is earthy. Somebody's put that one in.
Yeah, it's called petrichor.
Thank you.
Petrichor. It originates from the Greek of the blood of the stone. I think if I remember that correctly, Claire, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Heavenly blood of the stone.
Oh, so you can get blood out of a stone. So we've got that one. That one down.
But petrichor, that smell is fabulous because it depends where you are as to what it will smell like. So if you're in a kind of forest or shrubbery, you know, green area, then you can have the really earthy smell. And there's a bacteria called geosmin, which is in the ground. And so when the raindrops hit the ground, you know, you've seen those slow-mo pictures, haven't you? Raindrops, you know, exploding as they hit the surface of the earth. And it's that explosion of water that releases all the chemicals and that smell, geosmin, from the ground. But then if you're in an urban area, you know, you've got tarmac, rubber, that's all on the ground, and you get a very different sweet smell. So I think everyone will recognize it after a long dry spell and that first bit of rain. You know, you can smell it, especially in Spain, you know, when you've got that long dry spell, and you know, you can really smell it, can't you?
I'm lucky enough to have a place in the hills and the pine forest behind Marbella, and so when it rains like we had a couple of days ago, it really, that smell is almost overpowering, but it's absolutely wonderful after a long hot dry summer. We're talking about sort of everyday phenomenon, if you like the rainbow, and we go, yeah, you know, red and orange and whatever, and green, I can never remember my nursery rhymes. But Claire, if you think about it, you know, the refraction of light and etc., it really is quite astounding and astonishing.
It's absolutely clever, and that's why we talk about it in terms of magic and pots of gold, because it's something you really feel blessed when you see a rainbow. We see a lot of them in the UK, and it really is just sunlight just breaking through those drops of water and breaking the light, which looks white, into its constituent wavelengths from, as you say, red to blue. And it's an absolutely beautiful thing to see, and quite a tricky concept to describe, particularly to kids and adults as well, because your perspective of your view of the rainbow changes depending where you're standing. It's not really very real. That's the other thing. And, you know, it's something we try and debunk in the book. But there's so many different sort of optical moments in the sky you can see from day to day, from those beautiful nacreous clouds, which are 40, 50,000 feet in the air, to those halos you can see when a sheet of very, very high cloud just extends across the sun, creating a sort of a disc around the sun. It's an amazing discipline to work in, because every day you can marvel at the beauty of nature.
And another thing that we've been looking at is changing the weather. Now, we're talking about, you know, climate changes, but there was a lot of thing about, oh, they're mucking with the clouds up there. Something's going on. I mean, are we going to be able to change the weather? Can we divert hurricanes? Well, I think Trump looked at nuking a hurricane at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And you definitely can't nuke a hurricane.
Glad we got that one out of the way too. I was just heading to the bunker, yes.
Because a hurricane, you know, a medium-sized hurricane actually has more energy in it than about 100 Hiroshima nuclear bombs. You know, it is so powerful that you're not going to do it. All you're going to do is just put a load of radioactive material in the sky. It's going to kill off loads of stuff, so that's not going to happen. But no, it is a really interesting thing about changing the weather, because there are places out there which are looking at climate change. One example is the United Arab Emirates, where obviously it's a desert, but they've expanded, they've populated the area so much that they're struggling with water resources. So they've been looking at cloud seeding. Now, cloud seeding has been something that's been going on for quite a long time, but the science behind it is very tricky, a bit uncertain. You can't really tell whether, you know, putting this bit of salt it is in the cloud. The idea is that you can basically increase the cloud condensation nuclei, it's called. So you can increase the amount of rainfall that falls from a cloud to the ground. That's very difficult to prove whether or not it works, but science has come along, technology has come along, and the United Arab Emirates are cloud seeding regularly. You know, they are trying to use this technology to get as much rainfall, as much water out of the sky as they possibly can. And they've done the maths on it, and they can, you know, however much it costs to cloud seed, you know, a cloud, they work out that actually they get more benefit from the amount of water that comes out of it. So, you know, this is, you know, really kind of sci-fi stuff happening on a daily basis in some parts, and geoengineering, you know, weather technology. You know, I think that's something we might see and hear more about in the future. One, you know, another one, carbon, direct air carbon capture, you know, sucking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. You know, it happens. We can do it now on a very small scale, but, you know, it's about scaling that up to make it more, economical, viable.
Just a quick question for you, Claire. I mean, we're going to run out of time, and I'm really gutted that we are. But, you know, we've all had those Mondays where we really can't sort of stand the thought of certain people. Are we ever going to be able to call down a lightning strike on somebody that we don't really like?
Again, further to Trump's attempt to nuking a hurricane. Absolutely not. Although the amount of lightning strikes hitting the earth at any one point is absolutely immense. So the chances of being struck by lightning, even though it's slim, it's always a possibility. And, you know, there's a myth that you only get struck by lightning once. You can be hit by lightning more than that. There are case studies of people who have been struck two or three times. Most people do survive, but even so, it can dish a lethal blow. And from my point of view, thunderstorms are absolutely beautiful. In a way, they just balance the atmosphere from being primed with too much humidity and too much heat. So they are necessary. But we're going to be seeing more and more of them in the UK as climate change really takes grip further and further into the next few years.
I was out on an aluminium boat on my lake a couple of months ago when a lightning strike came nearby, and I think I broke the water speed record. The book is called What Does Rain Smell Like? We're going to run out of time. I'm really sorry. It's by Simon King and Claire Nesser, who we'll be speaking to. Guys, if people want to find you online, where can they find you? Simon first.
I'm on Twitter at Simon OK.
And I'm at Claire Nazir.
Claire and Simon, it's been brilliant to speak to you. I'm going to crash the news, which, as you know, you can never do in professional radio broadcasting. This book is called What Does Rain Smell Like? Simon and Claire, thank you so much for your time today.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.